to behavior problems and can interfere with learning and overall quality of life. For more information, log on to autismspeaks.org.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
This is the WHFR Journal. Welcome, I'm Susan McGraw, and it is my pleasure to have a lovely opportunity to discuss not only all of the things that make my life pleasant, which is beautiful weather, green grasses, lovely trees, all the, you know, the birds chirping and the, you know, the sun shining and all that, but ways that we as a college at Henry Ford College are doubling down our efforts to make sure that we are as sustainable as we possibly can be. Full disclosure also, we are going to talk about a committee that is near and dear to my heart, which I happen to be a member of. So as the sustainability discussion goes, we're going to chat a little bit about sustainable HFC. And today I'm not wearing the hat of a member, I'm wearing the hat of an interviewer. But in order to wear a couple of hats, we thought we'd bring in one of the experts. And that is our own Nick Passero, who is the HFC Sustainability Coordinator here at Henry Ford College and also a member of Sustainable HFC. Nick, happy Earth Week. Happy Earth Day tomorrow.
Thank you. Happy Earth Day. Thank you for having me.
Certainly. Glad to have you here. We've said the word sustainable like six times already, at least I have. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, so sustainable or sustainability, really, when you think about it, is using your current resources in a way that future generations can utilize them in the same way without any decrease in quality or quantity. And to do that, and for that to be successful, it kind of has to capture three kind of targets, and that's going to be simplified as beneficial for people, beneficial for the planet, and for people to actually do it, it has to be profitable. And kind of when you put those things together, that's the way that sustainability would be framed in order to be successful in our current culture.
Okay, yeah. That's very helpful. This, it's a buzzword, you know, we hear it a lot, and it's like, well, we don't want it to get a bad, you know, bad reputation as just being thrown around to include, you know, like an umbrella of everything. So it's very specific what you talked about.
Yeah.
You are now in the role of sustainability coordinator here at the college, and I think that could mean a number of different things, but let's talk about your background and experience that brought you to this position today.
Sure. So originally I did my bachelor's degree in environmental science and sustainability at Florida International University in Miami, and I did my master's degree in sustainable design at University of Florida, and that was more of an architectural degree, but it's not really focused on architecture. It's more focused on energy-efficient buildings and green buildings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you found your way here.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Yeah, so that was actually unexpected, but when I was looking for these sort of sustainability jobs, you know, I went from government jobs to working for a company called Duke Energy. It's similar to DTE, and I was looking for, like, a legit sustainability program or sustainability project, and they're not easy to come by, and they're even harder to land. So I'm really grateful that I got to land this job, and HFC really stood out, and it still stands out. And there's a lot of ways that HFC is leading the way in doing what they're doing with the IEMP, the Integrated Energy Master Plan, and the sustainability initiatives and sustainability club on campus. So I'm really, really happy to be here and be part of that.
Right. Well, we're happy to have you
Thank
here,
you.
Certainly. And we talk about the IEMP and all that kind of thing. We've recently had a very famous visitor in the political world to our campus just last week. U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow came to the college to basically, she kind of presented us with a check, which is always a cool thing.
Yeah.
And also just really shining light on some of the efforts that you speak of regarding improving our energy output and what we use. And obviously that comes at a cost. So this this sort of passing of the check involves sort of a bigger picture, and that is that master plan that you talk about, the energy master plan. What can you tell us about that?
Sure.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, so that IEMP is really what triggered my job opening, and I got to give credit to John Setkowski and the board who approved this ambitious project. This is to decrease greenhouse gas usage by 60%, greenhouse gas emissions by 60%, energy efficiency increase it by 50%, and then reduce the water usage by 40% as well. So those are the target goals. We're at a 20-year contract, but we're already close to 40%. reduction in those numbers. So we really hit the ground running, and the work is showing.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
When Senator Stabenow came in, this appropriation, which we'll call it, to support these initiatives and how they not only impact the community and the energy, but also the students, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. But it's $3.1 million is not something to sneeze at. So this was a pretty big deal and an opportunity really to kind of brag about what we're doing at the college, but also to say, look, if we can do it, here on our campus, others can do it too. So we don't want to hoard or, do the sustainability things in secret, right? Because we want them to spread and grow and continue to impact others in a positive way. So what do you see as some of the biggest things that will come out for students' benefit as it relates to the master plan, to this investment, and also the approach and the mindset that Henry Ford College is adopting?
Absolutely. Great question. So really, the IMP was designed with students in mind. I sound like Dr. Neely in a way when I'm saying that, but really it's true. So that what it is all the upgrades that we've installed, whether it's the heating system, district heating network, the boilers, the HVAC upgrades, building controls, the xeriscaping, domestic water upgrades, everything was designed so that we can incorporate it into the curriculum for the students, so that HFC will have a leadership role in providing this type of sustainability education with top-of-the-line equipment, with top-of-the-line controls, and new curriculum that is built specifically off these upgrades. So this is already in place. It's not initiated yet, but it's already in place, and we're working on it.
So week by week. It sounds like these are opportunities for returning students, non-traditional students potentially, and people just out of high school to come to this campus and learn a skill that is relevant, current, valuable, and you're kind of on the whole cutting edge of it's happening now, it's being developed now, and within potentially a year, 18 months,
That's
2 years, there's a good opportunity for some nice work there, yes?
Correct, and the best part about it is because we're in it's a performance contract with our partner, Johnson Controls, who are doing these, installing these upgrades, where our programs are being reviewed by them so that our students can be prime candidates for the jobs in their company once they get out of these programs. So this is, and we have other industry partners that are reviewing our curriculum to make sure that the skills that we're providing our students are going to be fitting for the job market.
Yeah. Well, it just all makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does.
You know, it sounds so simple. Like,
it's not.
Why? Yeah, it's easy for me to say. It sounds so simple. Why doesn't everybody do this? Why is this happening? So ultimately, we talk about, we want to do good things for the environment because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Because it will, we only have this one planet that we're living on, Earth, at least
for now.
We're going to other places, we know. But for now, this is where we're at. This is what we're stuck with. And we've made a bit of a mess of it over these hundreds
Absolutely.
Of years. So this is an opportunity to shed some light on some things that are being done and can be done. But do you think the barriers tend to be financial more so than knowledge-based? Or do you think it's just that we're really figuring this out as we're going?
It's a combination. I think it takes ambitious leadership. It depends on how it's framed. Because you can frame these energy projects as investments that will provide a return on your investment instead of just framing it as, it's good for the environment, because that's not going to get people's wallets to open all the time. So, but when you frame it in this way and they see it as something that's going to be beneficial for the people in the community, it's going to be beneficial for the planet, and it's going to be beneficial for their pocketbooks and profit, then that way it's a lot easier for people to accept. And I think that's the actual trend that's going on in industry now. And Henry Ford College actually took a leap of faith, but took the initiative to take the lead on that.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Nick Becerro is joining us. He is the HFC Sustainability Coordinator and also a member of the it's really a it's a employee and faculty and administrators, anybody that wants to sit on this group here at Henry Ford College can. We call it Sustainable HFC, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But remember, we are celebrating Earth Week. Tomorrow is Earth Day, and we do have lots to celebrate, I think. You know, we have this tendency to hear in the media the doom and gloom and the all the bad, and we know there's plenty out there, but we don't want to talk too much about that in this interview because we want to talk about things that we can do, you know, and that are being done to make a difference. And really, that's where Sustainable HFC has come in. As a group of people, I think we've been, 2017, I think, is when we were founded officially, and we've ramped up since then. But we've noticed that there are things that could be done better on campus and things that we can spend more time on, more education on, and so on. And so a group of us said, let's create an organization where we can talk about it. And we've made it a committee, and it's been fantastic. Love the people on the group. But what has your experience been like in working with the committee? And do you think that, do you think our goals are too lofty, or you think we're on the right track?
No, I think we're on the right track. I think it's a pretty open-minded group. We take a lot of different people from all different types and sections of the campus, and we listen to their ideas. If their ideas are doable, and even if it might be challenging, we will still be willing to take on that challenge. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity for growth. I definitely feel that way. And but I'm proud of what we've done so far, for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the successes, if we can.
Sure.
I know we're seeing more of the water filling units, you know, to save the plastic. And anytime I see, when I use one in the other building that has the little keeping track of how many bottles we're saving, that is the coolest thing.
Yeah,
it's
I like that.
It's so cool. And it's true. I mean, it's making a difference. That plastic has to go somewhere, you know. Well, let's try to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Right? So something as simple as that, or even as I always say, on the hand towels in the restrooms, on the you know, the container that you pull the towels out from, there's just a little sticker that says, "These come from trees." People don't think about that.
Yeah.
This paper that I'm taking more than I need, and frankly, you know,
for sure.
I like the hand dryers myself, but we'll get there one day. But all of these little things really are adding up and can add up.
Absolutely.
And so I appreciate that. What do you think the direction of the committee should be going into? And we'll talk about the tree planting and so on as well. But what do you see as some of the things that you'd like to, you'd be excited about us trying to kind of tackle?
Honestly, I think to have a successful project, especially in sustainability, it takes input from different groups of people with different expertise. So the IT department's going to have certain issues that they deal with that we could incorporate sustainability into. The music department might have some waste that they're producing that we could incorporate to a recycling program or things like that. So it's about communication, it's about collaboration, and hearing from different people about different ideas that would be falling in that sustainability category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
It really is a group effort, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Bigger than just the Sustainable HFC group, of course. Yeah. We're talking about the entire campus. When we get into some of the things that, you know, maybe we dropped the ball on years ago because there, you know, we remember when recycling of paper was just kind of started off as a big thing, and we had the big bins, and then those kind of come and go. Recycling is not cheap. We've learned, and it also does require a great deal of planning and coordination, and it's sometimes pretty time-consuming, just even the process of coordinating where you're going to have the different areas to, you know, the bins to put things, and then where do you send them, and then are they reputable, and how much are they charging, and so there's so many factors in play. Back to that original question, why isn't everybody doing this?
So it's just speaking about recycling, just to understand how complicated it is, or how you don't really know, is stuff actually getting recycled?
Yeah.
Amongst the vendors who are doing recycling for the campus, who proposed us to be our recycling supplier, they weren't able to, they weren't able to guarantee that they would be able to recycle the materials. So the one we chose was the only one that was able to guarantee that. The other two, they weren't able to guarantee that.
What do you mean by that?
So when you have materials that are going to recycling, sometimes that would actually end up going to the landfill, even though you think it's going recycling. And that could be for many factors. That could be because there's food waste on it. It could be that it wasn't sorted properly. It could be that it wasn't bagged in a clear bag, for example, and the vendors, they won't recycle it if it's not done exactly the way they want it to be done. Hmm. So there's some vendors that can guarantee for sure that it'll be recycled, and that's the one that HFC went with. But we still have a long way to go because we only have recycling in the student center right now.
Yeah.
And it's something that there's definitely room for improvement, and it's on the list of things to expand on this year as a facilities department.
It's nice that we do have some forward momentum, though. There is some movement.
Absolutely.
And it's nice to see some of the fruits of our labor as a committee, as well as buy-in from others on the committee, in the community of our campus that maybe before just didn't take it seriously or just, too much to do.
Yeah.
There's always going to be excuses and there's always going to be naysayers, but chipping away and doing the best we can so that one day this all becomes normal,
it's global. It's about education, and at least for like the students on our campus, for them to be aware of how recycling works, so when they're putting their items in the recycling bin, they need to know that, and by working with students, by being part of the sustainability committee, that's what brings about those results.
Yeah. We are fortunate to have a campus that has beautiful nature around
it. Wildlife on campus.
Wetlands and lots of wildlife on campus. More than sometimes we think about, or that we want. Fighting with those geese.
Geese. It's always like everybody's just devolved into a geese argument at one point.
Oh, no. I could see that. I could take both sides depending on my day. But when it comes to teaching students, we're learning from them, aren't we? As you said, you know, our committee, we were like, and then it was like a challenge or a task, like, okay, administrators, faculty, employees, we charge you as students to do something, and there we are. But we're learning so much from the younger generations, and I kind of put you in that younger generation.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But why do you think that's so?
I think that because they have a fresh outlook. They really see that there's opportunities for them to make a difference. They're not stuck in, what I would consider like corporate, workspaces or 9-to-5 jobs, and they have the opportunity to say, hey, I can really do something about this. And to have that fresh energy, to have that youthful outlook, it's important to have that in cooperation with some of the more experienced people in our community so that they can voice their opinions and their concerns and their ideas, and the ones with that sort of management or pull, so to speak, can actually make a difference and start having those ideas work for them. So that collaboration is a must.
Yeah, that makes sense. We talk about some of the beautiful environments around us, but also some of that didn't just happen to magically appear.
Oh.
We're planting and we're gardening and we're trying to sustain and cultivate and grow here at Henry Ford College. So can you speak on what you've seen as far as some of the changes in terms of the campus itself and our approach to sustainability?
Sure, absolutely. So there's a few features that are on campus that were here before I got here. That would be the rain garden, and that was started by the Environmental Student Association there, and the green roof that was also there. And I've walked through there and I've seen all sorts of creatures and critters, so that's a great place to be if you're interested in that. Also, we've installed a bat house that's in like a hidden location, but it's there and it's meant to be that way. Bats are secluded creatures. We also have bluebird and purple martin houses. We have an apiary, which is a bees in collaboration with the University of Michigan Dearborn. That got put on hold this year due to some changes in University of Michigan, but it's definitely something we can get up and going again, and that all happened during COVID. And also, which is part of the IEMP, is the xeriscaping project, which converted like 11 acres of traditional turf grass into Michigan native prairie. That reduces the water use, that increases the rainwater retention, increases biodiversity, provides habitats for all sorts of pollinators. It's fantastic, honestly. That xeriscaping portion of the project, although it has some growing pains in the beginning, it's something that it's taking off. It definitely took off in the western part of the United States, but here in Michigan, to be pioneering that is something that students and faculty should be really proud of.
Yeah. Interesting. Nick, to learn more about the Sustainable HSC Committee, it's very simple, hscc.edu/sustainability. That word again, that keeps coming around, but rightly so. So if you'd like to learn more about what the organization is doing and ways that you can support this committee, please check that out. When we talk about ways that we can, you know, just kind of help in our own backyards, in our own communities, in our own households. I know that that's not necessarily your thing, but yeah. Taking all of these bigger picture things that you've been doing, kind of whittling that down a little bit to the listener right now that's saying, yeah, it's not going to make a difference. Yeah, right. If I throw that bottle in the thing, or if I don't do this, or if I, that's not going to make a difference. I'll just bet your education on the fact that you believe it will make a difference.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some things that I've recently started doing at home and things that I've encountered throughout my education and my career that I definitely know makes a difference, like capturing rainwater, like starting your own urban garden in your backyard if you're able to do that based on where you live. There's those type of things you might think, oh, it doesn't really make a difference, but when whole communities begin to do that, you start seeing a change in mentality, a change in how people spend their money. Like it shifts the way that the culture of the community works, and that all leads to more benefits for the individual. So I can definitely see how. Here, another example that something that Henry Ford College is doing, it has to do with collecting hazardous waste. It's not only for the people who work here, for the waste of the college. People in the community are encouraged to bring their hazardous waste so that doesn't get dumped in and thrown into landfill or get leaked into the Rouge or who knows where it ends up. So that'll be coming in an email blast to the campus. But those type of things, of course, they make a difference. And I would encourage everybody not to be pessimistic, really. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to look at it. We have so many things to be grateful for in this campus community and our Dearborn community, in fact, which I know is working very hard to try to institute very similar kinds of things in their public areas as well as their their community-based organizations and things. But it's exciting that we can say at WHFR that we belong to a college that really believes in all of this, yeah. And is committed, even through creating positions like the HFC yeah. Sustainability Coordinator, to make a difference, to get things done. Yeah. And your percentage of 40% from the beginning of our discussion blows my mind. So let's just revisit that, the master plan, the time frame for it, yeah. And where we are at this point, and so we can kind of figure out how far we have to go.
Sure. So, like I said before, the goal is to reach a 60% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions and a 50% increase in energy efficiency. And we're already about 40% there, and we started construction, I think, 2 years ago. So we're really making fantastic progress, and the numbers speak for themselves. It's not something that is smoke and mirrors. It's like, these are what the bills, these are the utility bills, this is what we're emitting. It's definitely data driven. So to have that success already in such a short period of time, when it's a 20-year agreement, a 20-year goal that we have, our future for continuous improvement is fantastic. We have a lot of potential to do more projects and to make more gains. So really happy about that. And this is all a project that students can be involved in when they enroll in these programs. And when they come to my office, they can email me. I have no problem with that. And an icon of that on campus is definitely going to be the xeriscaping that you see once everything starts flowering in the spring. And if you go into e-building in the new energy center, where we have the new boilers, we have cogen units, that's designed to be a living classroom for the students. And it's encouraged for students to go check that out and see it and eventually be a part of it and learn there. And also not to just think about sustainability as planting trees, although we do plant trees. And we have a tree fund. We have a tree planting event coming on Arbor Day and on the 28th of this month. So I definitely recommend anybody who's interested in that to also come out and volunteer. But to also think about sustainability as reducing energy use. You think that that's not really doing much, but that saves tons of fossil fuels that are going to these generators and energy plants that are eventually bringing this energy to our buildings. So if you track where your energy is coming from and you're able to reduce that load, you are actually making a difference.
Nick, we thank you for your time. You mentioned an email address. Would you share with us?
Sure. My email address is njpacero. This is my last time. I'm going to spell it for you. So it's NJ, P as in Paul, A-S-E-I-R-O at hfcc.edu. And you can find my email on the Sustainable HFC website, I believe. So that you can reach me there as well.
Wonderful. And that, again, is hfcc.edu/sustainability, or just search Sustainable HFC on a Google search and you'll find it. So thank you for your time. Really appreciate it.
You're
I know how busy you are, and you took the time to come and talk to us to celebrate Earth Day 2023
us.
So we'll touch base probably before, but Earth Day 2024, and see how we're doing, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
All right. All the best. We've got more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal. Happy spring to you. Happy Earth Week, happy Earth Day. Even if you do one thing to make a difference, let's see if we can all commit to that. One thing, big, little, whatever, we'll take it. We're just excited to be here to be able to talk about important topics like this. So we've got more on the way. Susan McGraw here. Stick around. More WHFR Journal after this.
There's something about it. The anticipation when the vinyl gets to speed and the needle finds its groove. Vinylthon 2023 is coming. The celebration of vinyl on the air is now 2 days, April 22nd and 23rd.
It's our first ever weekend event when radio stations across the country and around the world go all vinyl up to 48 hours.
Vinylthon is also for a good cause.
Raising money for student scholarships for those who want to work in radio after graduation.
The future broadcasters of tomorrow.
So get ready for the needle to hit the groove.
April 22nd and 23rd.
Vinylthon 2023 is nearly here.
For more information, please visit vinylthon.com.
Vinylthon on the station making waves, WHFR.FM 89.3.
Vinylthon, because when the needle drops, the power rises.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek with you until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Kitty Love coming up, taking us on a trip down Highway 61 with some blues for this wonderful Friday afternoon here on WHFR. Our next segment on the program, we're going to turn our attention to an online seminar that was given last week, last Friday, by the Council of World Cultures here at Henry Ford College. It featured two presenters speaking on the topic of the power of kindness. The first of our presentations from the Project 1231 discusses creating easy opportunities to love your neighbor like you love yourself. And then we will also hear from the Future Teachers Association here at Henry Ford College, showcasing their community involvement and partnership with William Ford Elementary School here in Dearborn. Members will share what they're doing to build the relationship with students, including activities to increase their love for reading. We're going to turn things over to Director of Student Affairs here at Henry Ford College, our good friend Cassandra Fluker, who's going to set the stage for the rest of today's program here on the WHFR Journal.
Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm Cassandra Fluker, Director of Student Activities and the Chair of the Council of World Cultures. And on this call, we have other members, Dr. Courtney Matthews, Sarah Gonzalez, Jennifer Stewart, and I hope I'm not missing anyone, but all of the four of us represent the Council of World Cultures, and of course others who are not in attendance with us today. But the Council of World Cultures is a standing committee here at Henry Ford College, and it seeks to foster increased global awareness and understanding. So this council is unique because we create programs to bring awareness to various cultural, social, and political issues. Today, we are showcasing two groups, one external and one internal, that extend themselves to help others in the community. The title of our program today is The Power of Kindness. Kindness is choosing to do something that helps others in some sort of way. And those ways include physical, spiritual, psychological, and emotional. Research shows that helping others can benefit our mental health and well-being, and it can reduce stress and improve self-esteem and our level of happiness. Another important aspect of kindness is that it's contagious. Acts of kindness encourage others to do the same for someone else. And this is the meaning of the term pay it forward. So most of all, kindness contributes to the positivity in the world. And this is what we all want, right? So our first guest is Project 1231, and it will be introduced by Dr. Matthews.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It is my pleasure to introduce presenter Amanda Brooks, who is both the founder and CEO of Project 1231. So this organization is a U.S.-based not-for-profit that seeks to educate, equip, empower every human on their journey to radical kindness, intentional connection, extreme generosity, and active compassion. And this organization does this through various projects that focus on social issues that affect the world. Their goal is to create easy opportunities for people to love their neighbors and love themselves. I would like to go ahead and turn it over to CEO Brooks.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. Thanks, Courtney. Thanks, Ms. Cassandra. So I will just go ahead and share my screen and get started so I can show you a little bit more about what we do and just how transferable it is to any state that you're living in. As Courtney said, we are Project 1231, and we just create really easy opportunities for people to love their neighbor like they love themselves. I am not going to reread all of this because Courtney just did a wonderful job of doing that. But you can find all of this information on our website, project1231.org. So why Project 1231? So in March of 22, I lost my job very unexpectedly. And so I was just kind of like, what should I be doing? And I started taking walks around my Upper East Side neighborhood and really just reflecting on the amazing community that I had around me with friends and family, all just rallying around to support me. And as I was walking around and just processing this kind of really big thing that happened to me, I really began to notice our unhoused neighbors on the street and how our housed neighbors were interacting with them. So it was a variety of wanting to help and not knowing how, others kind of being annoyed about it and just needing to go places. There was a mix of shame and fear and guilt, apathy. And all I kept thinking was, well, what if it were me? What if I didn't have a support system? What if I didn't have any sort of plan? How would people be treating me? And I'm a Christian. And so I just started praying about a solution. And as I read my Bible, I came across the verse Mark 12:31. And it says, love God with all your heart, mind, body, and soul. And the second commandment is love your neighbor like you love yourself. There is nothing greater than that. And so that it just clicked immediately for me. And so I just thought about, like, well, what is stopping people from, you know, doing this very easy thing of loving your neighbor like yourself? And it is simply, it seems very simple, but for a variety of reasons, it's really hard to do well and to do it with consistency. And as we just heard, kindness, generosity, connection, they're contagious. And so I really want to make sure that it's easy for people to be kind and generous and connected to their neighbors, whether they're housed or unhoused. And so how we do that is through what we call dignity bags. And dignity bags are born out of this idea that those who are experiencing street homelessness should have easy access to high-quality hygiene kits, food, private and public resources that make it easier to live with dignity. So our theory of change and our social impact hypothesis is that if we create dignity bags, which are these high quality hygiene kits with two nutritious snacks and printed resources that connect people to detox and rehab programs, consistent food, clothing, emergency housing, et cetera, the housed would be able to give them to the unhoused, which will then allow a social and emotional connection to be made, which will then destigmatize the homeless experience and create space for people to choose to reintegrate back into society, if that's what they want, and allow those who live on the street to do so with dignity. So what is a dignity bag? I traveled around Costa Rica last year for 2 months, and there were a lot of things that I wish that I had in order to make sure that I was able to maintain my own, like, personal hygiene. And so a lot of that went into this bag. I also was able to chat with a few of our unhoused neighbors and really ask them, like, what would be the most helpful? What would be the most effective? The main thing they said is a plastic bag with a handle. just because once the things are done, they're able to then put things that might get wet or they need to keep dry in that bag. So it was super important that we had a bag with handles because we didn't want to add something that they couldn't carry around with ease. And so you'll be able to see here, we have socks and underwear, toothbrush, toothpaste, Mylar blankets. You know, I live in New York City, but you know, I also do this in Los Angeles, and they're effective all over the country. They just allow people to be able to be warm. Hand warmers, those are seasonal, just depends on when we need them. Floss, dental health is something that immediately separates the housed from the unhoused, because they just aren't able to get to the dentist or not able to floss. And so that is something that when you meet somebody who's unhoused, you notice that immediately. Lotion, deodorant, soap. For those people that experience periods, we want to make sure that they have pads available to them. We have wet ones, crackers. So there's like these Belvita crackers that like can keep you full for about 4 hours or so. Tunicates. We're now also putting a few like gummies and chocolates in there, just because like there's a time when you might need a little bit of a sweet hit. And so we want to make sure that we're able to give that to our recipients as well. We also have microfiber cloths. They can be used both ways, as a washcloth or as a way to dry off. They dry extremely quickly, so they're not walking around with something that's sopping wet and getting everything else in their belongings wet as well. We have Kleenex. Everybody needs a tissue every once in a while. Mouthwash, rain ponchos. This is another one that our clients have really told us that is extremely helpful. Once everything gets wet, it's months before it really, really dries out. They don't have access to dryers, and so everything you have kind of has that wet and mildew feel. It really is quite uncomfortable. And so the rain ponchos have been a big hit as well. And then chapstick, dry lips is just the worst. And so we really want to make sure that these pouches are not just like bare necessity, but really just letting people know that like we are not going to treat you from a place of lack. And we want to make sure that we're helping to instill an idea of abundance. And so that's why they're there. And these take about $16 to create. We're so grateful that we have partners that are using our Amazon wish list to, you know, be able to fund these. But the dollar store has also been really great with making sure we can get these all in budget. So just how to use a dignity bag. And again, like this list is available to everybody so that you're able to use that, whether you're in Michigan or California or New York or Mississippi. Really wanted to make it easy for people that just needed like the structure to be able to get going, to be able to use them. So sometimes people come to me and say like, well, I don't know how to do it. I'm not an extrovert. Like I can't talk to anybody. And so I just came up with a really way of like, how do we use our dignity bags? And again, kindness is intentional. It's not just something that we're like, oh, well, I kind of have that. So here's my half-eaten sandwich. Like I'm not eating someone's half-eaten sandwich, neither are you. So I just really try not to offer, things like that to other people. But all you have to do is put a dignity bag in your car, in your backpack, in your purse, or just carry one. Again, they have the handles. They're small enough to go, in various sorts of bags. The other thing is just to practice like heads up commuting. And that just means looking for opportunities to be generous. There's so many people that are in need and you can't help everybody, but you'll know that feeling in your body where you're like, oh, that's the person I'm supposed to help. That's the person I'm supposed to stop and connect with. So just really pay attention to that. And then engage your unhoused neighbors from a place of intentional connection. Now we don't want to just shove a bag in their face, or, you know, if they're lying somewhere, just drop it and run. That's kind of not what it's designed for, but you can do that. They will definitely appreciate what the contents of the bag. But if you need a bit more help with kind of that intentionality piece, here are some great questions like, what's your name? Or my name is, what do your friends call you? Mine call me. Among the unhoused community, there is a little bit of a stigma about giving their real name, just because they can be tracked, or, you know, you might be experiencing some mental illness there. And so there just might be a fear around that. So I often say, what do your friends call you, just to allow them to tell me what they would like to be called. As the conversation is going, you can really say, you know, what would life look like for you if everything went right for the next 6 months? What do you want people to know about you? What are you passionate about? I think that passion question has gotten a lot of wonderful responses. You'll see a little bit later in the presentation, I have a friend called Joey, and you know, he's an artist and he's a designer. And so that question just allowed him to show me his sketchbook. And, you know, we're going to start working on some ways that he's going to actually be able to practice that again, after kind of going through what he's experienced. But what's making life challenging for you right now? If you're a person who prays, you can offer to pray for them. What are your top three feelings in this moment? This question can really ground people and help them to come out of what they're actually experiencing, and begin to allow their body to process kind of their experience. The one thing about money is that if somebody asks you for money and you don't want to give it or you can't give it, you can literally just say, I don't normally give money, but I have a dignity bag. It is okay to not offer money if that's not something that you're comfortable with. And so you don't have to feel any shame or guilt or, you know, frustration or anything about that. A smile, really just letting them know that they're a person is really what people are looking for. If they're going to ask for money, like, who wouldn't? But you don't have to give it and you don't have to feel bad, but just offer a smile or offer a bag if you have one. So this is Joey. This is one of my friends now. I'm going to just pop off the screen and just show you the video.
This is Joey. We met about 7 months ago at an outreach site when I asked him what he was reading. The conversation was easy and we immediately bonded over our shared love of books, movies, and coffee. Our weekly chats got deeper and I was able to give him a dignity bag and then get his feedback on what would make dignity bags better or more effective. We now hang out for lunch or shopping or take walks every week after outreach, and last Sunday, Joey joined me for Easter service at my church. Social and emotional connections create space for our unhoused neighbors to reintegrate back into mainstream society and remember their passions, skills, and hobbies. To support the creation of dignity bags, you can visit us at project1231.org/donate or Venmo us at project1231. As always, click that follow button for more kindness and human dignity content.
So that is Joey. And like, he's just so creative, you know, and like, I would not have learned that about him had I not noticed the book that he was doing and sparked that conversation. So it's really things that you're like, what do I do in my life? What am I interested in? And you'll find that person and like the universe and God will just bring that you guys together. And so it's just really important to be mindful as you're, you know, engaging. Also, be safe. Trust your gut. If you feel like I'm not supposed to walk up to that person, trust that. You'll know inside you what's comfortable and what's not. The other thing that we do offer is called a free store. And so every quarter, just as the seasons are changing, we ask for donations from, you know, people that live in the neighborhood, or we have something called a buy nothing group. And so people just have stuff that they're giving away constantly. And so we're able to stock with like new to gently used clothes for men, women, children, shoes, clothing, household items, and more. We really want our unhoused neighbors or those that are living below the poverty line to be able to access new and gently used clothing. If they're going for an interview or if they're just walking down the street, we don't want them to be leading with lack. We really just want to create space where at every quarter they know that they can get something new and that's something that's weather appropriate. Our stores are designed for our unhoused neighbors and our housed neighbors to like stop and shop and talk and connect, and really just have that moment where everyone is viewing each other as just like a regular human being who's coming in and needing help picking out the right size or what looks good for them. And so our next project and the one that we're kind of working on is a very long-term project. It's called the Human Dignity Project, and it means that every human has value, just because they're human. And so at Project 1231, we believe the solution to homelessness is for people to reintegrate back into mainstream society. We're being very specific about this group of people that this helps. We're going for veterans, single parents, the formerly incarcerated, their children, those that are experiencing those homelessness, because we want them to remember and rediscover their skills and their passions, their hobbies, wants, and desires. We plan to create a physical community that has housing, a life skills program, and a thrift store. This will allow our unhoused neighbors the security they need to learn and develop their skills. And they need to practice socially and emotionally reintegrating back into society. Our goal for our neighbors at the end of this program is that they'll have a job in their desired field and the finances to obtain and maintain their housing. We're also not going to say at the end of 6 months, okay, all done, we'll see you later. No, this is an ongoing thing. And so we'll follow up with them kind of in the next year or year and a half with just like regular meetings, regular counsel, regular support. To let them know that they have a support system for as long as they want it. And so they're not feeling like they're kind of out there. And this is, again, very long term. We're really focusing now on the dignity bag part piece because that's something that's accessible to everybody. It's really great for kids to learn about how to be outward and really be kind. It's great for older people. It's great for anybody who's really looking for an opportunity to just connect with other people. So ways to donate and partner with us, you know, you can visit us at project1231.org/donate. We do in-kind and monetary donations. Like and follow and share our content on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook.
You can learn about more stories like Joey as well. And that's all I have. Are there any questions that I can answer?
Yes, that is a great program, Ms. Brooks.
Thank you.
So I do have a couple of questions. You use the term unhoused. You know, I never thought about using unhoused in place of homeless. Mm-hmm. So that gives, you know, a person dignity and value. So it's just something that I never thought about. So thank you for sharing it and providing insight. Now, my first question is, how did you come up with the name 12.31?
So that comes from a Bible verse. It's called Mark 12:31, and it's just love your neighbor like you love yourself.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think you said that, didn't you?
Yeah, in the beginning, but it's good to repeat it.
Okay.
And I think just a quick note on the house versus, you know, homelessness, like homelessness is a label. And so we don't want anyone to feel stuck in their label. And so if we're using unhoused, that means that there's an ability to remove themselves from that. And so we just try not to describe people by like just their circumstance.
Okay. Thanks for explaining that. And with your free store, is the building donated? Is it rent free?
Yep. I do a lot of partnership conversations. So really go after a lot of churches or just community buildings and try and do collaboration. So I collaborated with a church in the neighborhood. They also offer like meals. And so they did a meal in the morning and we did the free store in the afternoon. So just looking for places that are already doing the work that we're doing and trying to bring our resources together. I don't want to recreate the wheel if I don't have to.
Other questions?
let me put my screen just to, so you know who you're talking to. Hi, my name is Sarah. And I probably missed this or got confused. You said that you were in New York, but this activity is here or is in different states, going on in different states?
So I got confused. We incorporated in New York, but we're launching, we hope to be like nation and global all over.
Mm, okay.
And so right now we're in New York and LA. And so just looking for opportunities to partner and find people that like have a shared vision so that if I'm not physically in the state, we're still kind of keeping the integrity of the program. We're looking to kind of make this a national program.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for clarifying.
I do see in the chat, it says, please share with us the struggles and hurdles that had to overcome to make this happen. The biggest struggle is just actually on the house side is really breaking down some of the stigmas and bias that come. Like, so when you think about homelessness, you think kind of dirty, smelly on the corner, you must have done drugs and alcohol to get there. Like you got to get yourself out of this. And the reality is that like the median age for people experiencing homelessness is actually 12 years old. And the majority of people that are experiencing homelessness are, you know, mothers and their children. And what we're seeing, which is the street homelessness, is like just the iceberg. And it's just we've hit really, really hit rock bottom. And so it's just trying to help people understand like, the systems that we have in place, the social systems don't talk to each other. And so, you know, I experienced it last week where, you know, someone was trying to get, you know, some assistance with food stamps, but they needed a phone, but they couldn't get the phone because they didn't have food stamps. And so you're like, well, how is that person meant to like help themselves and get better if like you need one thing to get the other, but you can't get the other because you don't have this? And the solution was like, yeah, you know, it's just rough. And you're like, that's not a solution. Like, so. It's really just the systems that we have in place to help are not actually helping because they kind of don't talk to each other. And then the fear and the, you know, just we've decided as a society that those are experiencing homelessness, like it's okay that they're outside of society because they must have done something to deserve it. And really just helping people to understand and start to ask questions and really examine where did that come from for you. Has been the biggest hurdle, because we just, it's easy to look away.
Okay. Ms. Brooks, I have one more question.
What?
Okay. You had mentioned that the bag itself is roughly $16.
Yes.
And that you receive, discounts from Walmart and Amazon. Have you ever applied for a grant?
Yes. So, mm-hmm.
So we're in the process now. I have a girl called Pauline. She's on my development team. And so we're applying for 3 grants right now, which by April 30th, we have to apply by 3 of them. But the interesting thing is that, like, as a startup nonprofit, it's really hard to get money because they try to give money to nonprofits that are already established. And so some of the requirements are like, well, you need to be 2 years, you know, have 2 fiscal years under your belt, or, you know, $250,000. So you're like, well, it takes money to get money. And so right now we're just focusing a lot on the low barrier to entry grants. And then also just a lot of funding from individuals to try and get to that initial mark. So that at 2 years, like, we'll be able to hit the ground running and just be able to show what we've been doing.
Okay, well, thank you, and good luck on receiving those grants.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so our next guest is one of our academic student clubs, the Future Teachers Association, and it, too, has done great work in the community, including partnering with a local elementary school, William Ford, located here in Dearborn, helping to increase the reading levels of students. So the Future Teachers Association advisor, Carolyn Cassell, will introduce the members and their reading program. Dr. Cassell?
Well, thank you so much for having us. Ms. Brooks, you are doing wonderful work. It was wonderful to hear about what you are doing. I've certainly walked away from that learning more and hopefully have a better understanding of the unhoused. And so thank you so much for sharing that. I am very fortunate to work with the amazing students at Henry Ford College, especially pre-education. My task here is to introduce our president, Leanne, and Leanne will take it from there. And that's been my task for the past 2 years here. I just propose something and my amazing students take it to a new level. So I am so excited to see them. And I see many of them here online. So they are, even though some of them have finished the course, they're still always being involved and doing things. So I am the director of pre-education at Henry Ford, and I also am the faculty lead for Future Teachers Association. Leanne Ross is our president, and Leanne will also introduce Miriam. I see Madonna on here, and I see Hyatt and Murtada. Those are also members of Future Teacher Association. I see also many of my students who, even if they weren't a member, they became involved in this activity. So Leanne Ross has been a send from heaven. She is hardworking. She has done more for our program than I can even say in words. So I will give her one activity and she will take it and go with it and do a million other things. So she brought in Miriam. So we were so fortunate for that. She has done countless activities, including bringing her teenage daughter to events. She is a non-traditional student that brings in that wealth of life experience to our campus. She will be graduating in 3 weeks. That is fantastic. And she's going to introduce the activities that we have been doing with William Ford. And you could see Ms. Kojay is there. And I'm just going to give a quick shout out to Ms. Kojay. She has been amazing. She is our lead partner at William Ford Elementary. So I'm going to hand it over to President Leanne. Thank you for everything that you've done.
Thank you, Dr. Cassell, very, very much. I didn't prepare and have my box of tissues, but that was wonderful. Thank you. To me, FTA are the acronyms of Future Teachers Association. Those to me are just letters. What FTA truly stands for is the unity of our community. We have partnered with an elementary school in our own backyard by the name of William Ford Elementary. Our club may be the future teachers. However, these students are the future people of everyone's community. We collaborate with William Ford Elementary, yes, to acquire our learnings from our classroom, but the real teachers are the students at William Ford Elementary. We started this journey with book readings. Our club was able to purchase books for the entire class to keep. We all read the books independently, but we came together as a group to discuss what we learned. This also introduced some of our own HFC graduates that had the opportunity to share books with William Ford students that they wrote. And the students came to campus for a field trip. We also have some of those students here today to share their experiences about the virtual readings and the field trip with HFC. This opened doors to endless opportunities. This semester alone, we have ventured into science with making of slime. Here, we're able to introduce what happens when you add too much mixture or not enough. The students were able to establish steps of an experiment with this integration. Next, we made lava lamps. This introduced math, measuring, and conversions, which led to our upcoming activity of M&Ms and fractions with the wonderful Dr. Carolyn Gasell. The connection here is conceptual thinking versus just procedural thinking. Building the skills of not just how to do the steps, but the understanding of why. This is the powerful link. Be a part of our unity for our community. None of these activities are possible without donations or fundraising. A big partnership that has involved our community is our very own treasurer, Miriam. She puts together great fundraising opportunities that have made some of these events possible, and I'll ask her to talk about them. So maybe next time your family is looking for something sweet, look for a day where you can be part of the FTA, or simply send an email to Dr. Carolyn Gasell or Ms. Cassandra Faulkner. So I would love to introduce our treasurer, Miriam.
Hi, everyone. My name is Miriam. I'm the treasurer of the FTA. And I'd just like to say thank you, Leanne. That was an awesome introduction to what we do. And we're always so excited to partake in all these activities with William Ford. I've started the FTA this year, so I'm quite a new member. And I realized that we had a little activity, you know, and I thought of so many other great things we could do, like the science experiments. I myself am an integrated science major, and I really wanted to get something going. So I asked Dr. Gasell, like, what can we do? And she said, well, realistically, what we need is money. So I work at the Custard Company. It's an ice cream shop here in Dearborn on Otter Drive in Monroe. And I reached out to my boss, the owner. I said, you know, I've joined this group. Like, this is our mission. And would you be willing to do a fundraiser for us? He said, yeah, of course. Like, whatever you guys want, like, I'm here for you. I'm here to support the future teachers. So we did our first one in November, and it went awesome. And we, with that money, that's how we got to do the science projects with William Ford. And then after we did those, we said, hey, let's put on another one. Let's do some more reading and authors events. So this, last month we did another fundraiser. It was great. We had a great turnout. So many people from the pre-education program were there. And it was awesome to see all those familiar faces. With that money, you know, we're planning to do more authors events. So just a little promo here. My little sister is one of our next authors. So I'm super excited for her that I was able to raise this money for her and that she'll be able to share her books with some students. With the authors event, I would like to introduce the kids and Ms. Kojay of William Ford Elementary. They're going to talk a little bit about their experience with that and what they thought. So Ms. Kojay, would you like to take it from here?
Yes. Hi, I'm Kim Kojay, the grade teacher at William Ford. My principal, David Higgins, proposed to me in January of 2022 to work with Dr. Gasell and the Future Teachers Association to work on a project with literacy. And I was really excited about this. Two reasons that I thought he picked the right person to do this with her. Number one, I am a product of Henry Ford. So I did go to Henry Ford for 2 years before I transferred over to Michigan State University. And then also, I am really excited about literacy. And oftentimes when other teachers say to me, how did you find time to read a chapter book with your student, I'm the first one to say you have to find time. So Dr. Gasell proposed doing virtual book clubs, And what we did was we split our students into four groups. And all the students had their own books, and we set a date for a Zoom meeting to meet with Henry Ford students to talk about the book with their group. The kids were super motivated, wanted to dive in to the book right away. Super excited to work with Henry Ford students and read more books by the author also. A lot of them commented that this was the best day of their life. Then the following school year, this year, Dr. Cassell proposed that we do this again. And this time we expanded it to do with two different classrooms. So my colleague, Francine Cerconi, and myself both did the book clubs. And, then we expanded it to do the author's reading. So we had two books that we did this year for the author's reading, and we have four fifth grades. We were able to get all four fifth grades to participate in this, and they read two classrooms read Sana'a Skyline and two read Waiting for You from, you know, written by local authors. And then we were given the opportunity to go to Henry Ford, tour Henry Ford, meet the author, ask questions, and the students were really excited to be, some of them, in Henry Ford for the first time, and in this world of technology, being able to be face-to-face. This was really exciting for them. The author signed the books for them. They were thrilled about this. The students felt comfortable, and so did I. Comfortable, welcome. We were able to develop a relationship between the elementary students and the college students around the topic of literacy.
Thank you for joining us. So thank you so much. And I thank the Council of World Cultures for hosting this program.
That is all we have time for on today's WHFR Journal, The Power of Kindness, presented by the Council of World Cultures here at Henry Ford College last Friday morning here on the campus, well, virtually on the campus of HFC. We also thank Susan McGraw and her interview earlier about sustainable HFC. Happy Earth Day, happy Earth Week, happy Earth Life.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Now that's where my baby stays.